82BD. A little bit noisy, but you sound good. KQRIW in the TechNet.
I think it depends on what they want to do. Right now, WABC Television, Channel 7, has three sub-channels. The main channel and its first sub-channel are both 16x9 high-definition format. Boy, is that causing a lot of problems, because by having two high-def streams, they're bit-starving all three channels. The main channel, channel 7-1, looks kind of lousy. Their 7-2 looks kind of lousy. And their 7-3, their weather channel, is really lousy. So it's up to the broadcasters, whatever they want to do. If they want three lousy-looking channels, they can do that very easily. K2RAW from KD2BD.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go take a better look at ABC. And I guess I'll have to also find out what's the RF channel. By the way, the Insignia, what is it now called? Lucky Gold Star converter that you and I are both using, Joe. When you program it to manually go to a channel number, and you put in a period first, if I put in period 21, it doesn't go to channel 21. Oh, yes, it'll really go to 21. If I put in period 22, even though 22 is the UHF channel transmitting channel 21 information, so to speak, it'll really go to 22. Whereas if you just plug in 22, it tries to go to the program called 22, which there isn't one to my knowledge right now. So that's one thing to know about. Also, so I said, when you put in a channel number versus a period first, then a channel number, you get the real RF channel when you put in the period first. In fact, it writes RF across the screen, RF 21, as opposed to Logic 21, let's call it. Now, when you've seen this low resolution, because two of the three channels are high def, are 16x9 and high def, or attempted high def, and you said that it kind of looks terrible, let me try to describe to me what the terrible looks like. Is the picture pixelated? Are there mosquito signs, what Eric calls, let me drop them. Eric calls it mosquito noise. Around printed letters, you see fuzziness. Are the sharp edges no longer sharp? Is it that kind of low resolution? Is the picture broken up into blocks, sort of pixelated? Or when you look at the grayscale across a person's face, it looks like paint with numbers, if you know what I mean. So what is the nature of the not-so-pleasant-looking picture that you've seen, John? KD2BD, K2RIW.
K2RIW and the TechNet from KD2BD. I think it's a lot of what you described. A soft image, basically, and a lot of fuzz around motion. You know, you can start to see the blocks of the image appear when there's some rapid motion. There is, as Eric has mentioned and some others have mentioned, there are some online forums where people discuss these sorts of things. One of the most popular ones is called AVS. AVS Alpha Victor Sierra Forum, and there are different categories for different discussions, and one happens to deal with NYC OTA subject, New York City over the air, and also Philadelphia over the air forum. I both look at those a couple of times a week, and both you'll find people on both forums very up in arms over what has happened, because both ABC in New York and ABC in Philadelphia and possibly all the ABC-owned and operated stations are doing this now, where their second sub-channel is in high definition. And with their first main channel being in high definition, you know, there's just not enough bits to have a high-quality picture on any of the three. K2RW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
This reminds me a little bit of what Eric said last week, and that is, because he works for the broadcast industry, he is able to view on an extremely high-resolution monitor the raw data that comes out of a high-definition camera. And the data is coming out at 1.1 gigabits per second out of the camera. And apparently that picture is better than a 35-millimeter slide done with Kodachrome, if you know what I mean, in resolution. And then, of course, we are bandwidth limited, it's a little bit unfortunate the United States chose 6 megs of bandwidth, and I think the United Kingdom has 8 megs of bandwidth on their individual television channels. They have a slight advantage over us. We've got 6 meg allocations for our channels, unless we're willing to double up the channels in some way. In other words, transmit digital information on both RF-21 and RF-22, in order to, if it's to be 21 material. Maybe they're going to do things like that downrange. Once we've got converters that are truly digital, in theory, by unplugging the demodulation chip and plugging a new one in, or in the case of the digital converters that you buy nowadays, with the card with a $40 discount, you go to Radio Shack, you buy the whole darn thing for 20-some-odd dollars. My guess is they're producing it for something like 20-some-odd dollars. And as such, it's not going to take a whole lot of dollars to change the converter section of a digital television set in order to be reformatted for changes that are going to occur downrange. It gives them a lot more software-defined radio-like characteristics. And that's one of the things that amazed me when we dropped. When I went to the very last meeting of the microwave update, which took place, let's see, where was the last one I went to? Philadelphia, I think it was. Yes, Philadelphia, year 2007, I think it was. A lot of the speeches given by ham radio operators were on the subject of software-defined radios being used in VHF, UHF, SHF, ham radio applications. The guys who are on 1296 and above are starting to get heavily involved with things like the K2 and K3 and other kinds of digitally defined radios. And I remember asking a number of those guys, at the rate things are going, 5 years from now, what percentage of the progressive ham radio operators do you believe will be using a software-defined radio? And the answer I got, more than 50%. So software-defined radios are the new in thing, making them thoroughly adaptable. I guess you could say our television is becoming somewhat software-definable. That's a guess on my part. I wonder if you think that's possible, John, because what ABC is doing, if I understand you correctly, is by the standards of the discriminating watcher, discriminating viewer, not very tolerable. People are starting to complain, and obviously corrective action is going to have to take place. Otherwise, they're going to lose their position in the Nielsen ratings. KD2BD for any comments. K2RIW on the tech man.
KC2QIQ.
Glenn recognized right after John. Go ahead, John.
KQRW in the TechNet from KD2BD. Software-defined television has a very nice sound. I think we're almost there. I read about a technology that I believe is already taking place where broadcast stations are sending not just audio and video encoded in the digital format, but firmware updates to receivers. So what you're talking about might already be taking place. I think one of the things that's really upsetting people about the two high-def streams for ABC television is that second stream, I think, most hours of the day is broadcasting infomercials. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I think broadcasters have the ability to jiggle around that's the amount of bits that they divvy up between sub-channels. So if they were to have some kind of a sporting event or some sort of a show that would for a large viewing audience and they want to minimize those digital artifacts, and maybe they can devote a little bit more digital bandwidth to that particular channel and let the other sub-channels starve a little bit just for that particular broadcast.
Interesting. Great stuff. The second channel is a over-the-air, what was it called now? Pay, where you can buy things. All of a sudden I've forgotten the name of it. I can see part of the motivation for making that high def, because if you're trying to sell a lady a dress over-the-air and she's looking at the shop-at-home channel, so to speak, to present that dress in the highest possible definition as far as resolution and color rendition is concerned, increases the probability she's going to buy it. That probably is their philosophy. You and I, who don't use shop at home, would think that it's a waste to take that high capability and use it on something that we don't watch and don't use. I can see what's going on here. Hey, Glenn, KC2QIQ. Are you using an Insignia Radio Shack-like Lucky Gold Star-chipped digital converter? And tell us what you know about all this jazz. KC2QIQ, KQRIW.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Actually, no, I'm not using those. I'm using Motorola. Just about all the stuff I have over here is Motorola. And And just as a reference, while I was listening, I turned on my box to channel 7, and channel 1 is definitely ABC HD. The second channel is called Live Well, and it's in a 4x3 format. Does not appear to be HD at all. It looks like a lower resolution, and the third channel looks like regular weather. It's cold weather, channel 7-3, and its resolution is, it's not that great. I mean, it looks like something you'd see, as a computer image on your on a PC. So I'm not doubting what he's saying about, having two HD channels, but apparently if that's the case, then right now, that's the condition it's in at present, so they may be able to switch that around so that in the evening when the premium shows come on for their channel or their flagship shows, they can switch back to full definition, because right now channel 7 looks beautiful, looks just nice. Back to K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
W-H-Y-Y.
Joe recognized that. John, it would be interesting to know, are you getting what you would consider full resolution on channel 7-1 at this time? A KD2BD, I wonder if you have a chance to go take a look at your set, and apparently at this time they're not sending a shop at home. KD2BD, K2RIW, you got it, John?
Yeah, it would take me a few minutes to check that. At least up until recently, there were two HD. In fact, that Live Well channel is called Live Well HD. The implication there meaning that it's high definition, but maybe they're caving under the pressure of irate people writing in and complaining about the quality that it's suffering as a result of that second HD channel. K2RW from KD2BD.
Very fine, John. And from what I remember Eric telling us, I think they are able to set the priority as to how many bits get assigned to which particular program channel, which program material stream. They can therefore set the resolution of each of those screens, and I think it can be done both as an overall general command as well as a dynamic setting depending on what's going on. W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-H-U-R-I-W, you got it, John?
Yeah, I just tried checking channel 21 again. On 21-1, 2, and 3, all three of them will not let me change the zoom control. In fact, it says aspect ratio share cannot be changed on this channel. It does it on all three channels. And I do remember previously I was able to change on the first channel. On channel 7, 7-1, 7-2, I can change it. 7-3, I can't. So I guess it is by station.
I think it's not only by station, but also by time. It is my guess that whatever program they're transmitting on channel 21-1 right now, it might be an older program that was recorded in the 4x3 format. Is that possible, John? I mean, Joe, the B2RYY, go ahead.
I guess it is, because it completely fills out the picture screen. It's not cropped, I guess it's what I would call cropped as far as the setting on the box goes, because it completely fills the screen out. It's not squashed from the sides or from the top.
KC2, QIQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, just here again, while I'm listening, I switched over to, channel 21, and I'm noticing, like, in the little letter boxes, because these Motorola boxes, they actually tell you what the emulation mode is in the corner when you go to it. So right now, it does not say for 21-1 HD, it says SD, and then the other channels just, let's see, that, now, just 2 is called Create, and 3 is called World. But when you go to the 21-1, it's WLIW-SD, so it doesn't say HD, so it's not in a HD format at this time. But they probably can switch that around. There must be a way of doing it, because I have seen 21 with high definition at a different time.
Yeah, I think that's program sensitive. I am guessing that the SD stands for Standard Definition. I wonder if you would agree with that, Glenn. And that particular program on 21-1 right now, maybe it's an older program from the United Kingdom or whatever. Out of curiosity, what is the material right now?
Right now, Dick, it's a telethon. They're giving us the number so we can all donate to WLIW 21. But, probably when the interesting thing is, I wonder if during this, usually they have other contents during these where they'll show you some premium showing during these telethons. where it might go back to a movie. It'd be interesting if I keep the channel on long enough to see if it goes back, if they can actually switch it on the fly right back to HD. But that's just a guess on my part, Vic. K2RAW, KC2QIQ.
And when you catch the very beginning of the telephone, it'll tell you pre-recorded or previously recorded. And it is my guess that some of those recordings are done in standard definition. So that explains it. You're not going to get the high-def 16:9 aspect ratio display capability if the original material, or at least the particular reel of that material you're using right now, happens to be in standard deviation. It's a guess on my part. And when Eric comes back later tonight or next week, he can give us a fill on that. I do remember Eric saying this morning that he was going in early because they were doing pledging today, and as such, he's on duty. All righty. Anyone else with any further questions or comments on all that has occurred up till now? Give me a call at KQRIW and the Tech Man. Okay. We have a slightly light night tonight. Light night tonight. And normally it takes us until after 11 o'clock where we answer all the questions and get through all the discussions. Mel, I know you had some mail last week that we didn't get a chance to finish, and I'm sure you've gotten some new mail this week. So you've got the floor. K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. Yeah, I should have made a comment about, you know, you're discussing about engineering, studying of engineering. And I do get questions on that. A number of people have questioned me, saying that, you know, they got into amateur radio because a friend demonstrated it and looked like a great way to have a lot of fun. But communicating, you know, via one of the, like you say, 24, 25 different types of amateur radio. And now they said that the fascination with radio, if there is a future in studying of electrical engineering and, you know, associated fields that more or less come along with it. As you said today, it's mostly going into a lot of digital type of equipment in the future. I'm sure everything most likely will be somewhat, everything in electronics will be somewhere in a software defined, and either the FC software, like software defined radios, etc., but software defined basically TVs or whatever. So they asked me if, you know, if it is a viable field to go into, and I said, I'm not sure. Is it going to be a future in this country for it? I don't know. I was going to get your opinion on that, because that seems to be a very important question I've been asked, Dick, over.
Okay. I work in the field of wireless radio engineering for going on 40 years. See, I really got doing it with a degree in hand starting 1964. Wow. That means 45 years? Wow. I've been doing wireless engineering for a lot of years. And although I've had all kinds of bachelor and graduate level courses, and I've had in-service courses on the subject of radar and antennas, mostly. Those are the subjects that I favor. I've had a moderate amount of engineering education. So here I am, earning my keep, making my fortune, pun intended, strictly with wireless RF engineering for 40 some odd years. Of the working knowledge I use every day throughout most of those 40 some odd years, the majority of that knowledge came from my ham radio exposure. The schools that I went to, the courses that I took, gave me the credentials and the background to call myself engineer, senior engineer, principal engineer, principal scientist, consultant, all kinds of crazy titles. The title was allowed because of the sheepskin, because of the educational credentials. But that's not where the working knowledge came from. The working knowledge came from hands-on exposure in ham radio. Let me drop it. Building antennas, building transmitters, building receivers, touching them, improving them, talking to other hams, and comparing notes. the majority of it over the air, but an awful lot of it these days is by internet, by listservs and microwave reflectors and things like this. So talking to other hams and doing it is where the majority of the working knowledge that allows me to earn my keep, that's where it came from. That tells me that ham radio, as a hobby, has an educational capability that is very hard to challenge by any other hobby I can think of a person go into. So if you want pure technical education, if technical education is what you want, I think you're going to be very hard-pressed to find a radio, find a hobby better than ham radio to give you that exposure and that education in a working knowledge manner. Now, is RF versus digital going to dominate? Let me drop on that one. I say RF. I'm convinced that RF is always going to be with us. Now, whether or not we talk about RF for short range, long range, high rate, low rate, whatever, is always going to be wireless. Even though a high percentage of our broadcast may become narrowcast by way of cable television and fiber and satellite, even though certain major portions of broadcast may become narrowcast, there still is going to be wireless. That Bluetooth object that operates between your ear and your cell phone, it's wireless. The cell phone itself is wireless. If you want portability with the thing that you do, cell phone communication, text messaging, and whatever, if you really want portability, if you want to be disconnected from wires, you're going to be wireless. That's RF. For people dreaming about our computers of the future are going to have a wireless keyboard, a wireless mouse, a wireless display, maybe even wireless power going to the computer itself. I've seen proposals along those lines, but they're a little bit crazy. So there's always going to be RF, there's always going to be wireless. Its exact amount of emphasis is going to slightly shift. In the past, all radio and television broadcast was over-the-air broadcast. And certain percentage of that are going to become narrowcasted by trunked techniques of some kind. But we really have fallen in love with portability of our communication things. You can't get, by my knowledge, portability without it being wireless. It may be optical transmission through air, but I think it's always going to be radio. It's going to be a major portion of it. That's an opinion. So a person who wonders, should he be studying wireless, if he's interested in the subject and enjoys it, I say, go for it. Yay, verily. For me, it was a very good occupation. Was. Listen to me, you're talking past tense. In theory, I retired in the year 2000. I work harder every day now than I did then as a consultant. And I'm doing wireless engineering, antenna design, hardcore UHF antenna design day after day. And I think I'm enjoying it. I'm in an environment where very few people understand what I do. Therefore, they think I'm the repeater. Time out. Very few people in the various organizations I work for understand what I do at the base level, so to speak. In the big picture, they sort of understand it, but what I really do day to day, they don't understand it. They think it's a black art, and they treat me very well accordingly. I like being treated well. I like what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it. So, you, I know, enjoy RF, and if you had the choice of an occupation today, and you were just coming out of school, I know what you would have chosen, Mel. You know what I would have chosen. Our opinions are not perfect for everybody, but it ain't going to go away. It can't go away. People just love portability. So if you like it, go for it. That's my opinion. K2KEY, K2LIW.
WB2EAV.
There's a man who's lived his world and a lot of it in RF. Tell us, Ed, what do you think? Should a guy coming out say, gee, I should ignore RF because the whole world's going to become digital? You got it, Ed.
Let me give you a slightly different take on that. I work with a lot of young, let me not say guys, guys and girls who come out of engineering school. And they're all digital computers, very, very little hands-on stuff that we learned back then. Now, somebody's got to do it, but I'm telling you, all the guys who are still doing that kind of stuff, RF stuff, as almost all of them I've been doing it for a long time. I suspect if somebody wanted to do that, they'd have a fight on their hands pulling that off, because they steer them almost completely towards everything computers. Dick?
Okay. So what you're saying, I'm reading two or three things into this, Ed. One, the schools have more digital smarts than RF smarts, therefore they're pushing people more toward digital than RF. And number one. Number two, another thing I'm reading into this is that a school who has to set their curriculum and what they're going to emphasize when they speak to potential parents of potential students, they have to present an image that, hey, our digital engineering department and our software engineering department, man, they're first rate. This is the best school you can go to. Because they think that's what every high school student wants. By way of the digital games they've used, they think the whole world is computer-oriented, digital-oriented. Number three, what I think you're saying is that not only the schools, in some cases, poorly equipped to teach analog and wireless techniques, but they think, and they may be in error, that there's not much demand for it, and maybe they're slowly admitting to themselves, subliminally, that even if they did teach it, a guy coming out of the school by way of past history doesn't have the ability to support himself with that. Until he goes out in the field, like you, I, and Mel have done, until we've been out in the field for some number of years as an apprentice, we don't learn that art. We're not skilled at it. So yes, there's a definite degree of difficulty of acquiring the skill. But if a guy is deep enough into ham radio, tinkering with it, talking to his buddies about it, I think he's going to acquire a lot of those skills on his own, independent of the normal educational processes. You and I did that. As you've heard me say earlier, the majority of my working knowledge did not come from the schools I went to. So I'm still saying that although it's not an easy path that you can easily recommend to a guy that, hey, he's going to get rich quick and he's going to love it, it's not quite that easy. But if a guy has a passion for the subject, and if he's willing to go through what you and I have gone through, and if he's willing to emphasize it by way of ham radio, I think he can acquire that skill and do well. You might differ. W2EAV, K2RIW.
You pretty well paraphrased what I was trying to say. It's really hard today because that's not what anybody wants. It's not what they're pushing. I think we've got a real problem coming up. And then, as you say, it isn't going to go away. But I'm not sure there are journeymen and apprentices coming up to do it. Everybody wants to do computer work. All they want to teach is computer work. So, I'm not quite sure where we're going with this.
Okay, let me hit you with another whole concept here, Ed. Since the majority, 90-some-odd percent of the technically oriented kids coming out of high school today have fallen in love with that computer and what it can do. Therefore, they're going to emphasize that for their education and their occupation. And because they're in the majority, that means that the employers, during tough times, are going to consider them a dime a dozen. Hire them when you need them, lay them off when you don't need them. By comparison, the guy who takes the slightly more difficult, the major more difficult path, and he chooses analog and wireless. And he, by the way, you don't want to be pure analog, because that analog person, that wireless person, must interface with a digital computer that does modeling. He must interface with the digital people who build the logic section of this handheld device, this portable device. He's got to interface with digital people. So he's got to know at least some of the vocabulary and some of the technology. So don't become pure analog, pure wireless and RF. Do allow some of that digital stuff to squeeze in there and maybe even make it a 50-50. But still, once a person acquires the RF knowledge, wireless knowledge, because he's a little bit rare, he's going to be treated better. He's not a dime a dozen. A smart company won't lay him off during hard times because they may not be able to get him back. I've seen a lot of that go on. I have seen organizations that have massive layoffs, but the RF people remain. I have seen that on a number of occasions because they know it's a valuable, rare resource that's hard to replace. You go out today and you put an advertisement in the newspaper that I need an antenna engineer with 10 years experience that can do such and such. You'll be amazed how few replies you'll get from A2EAV, K2RIW.
Okay, regarding your comment about you should not be analog, in this day and age, you couldn't do that no matter how hard you tried. The best you could hope for becoming a renaissance man, a jack of all trades, would be 50. The best is the idea that 0-100. You're not going to want any higher than 40-50%, you know, analog, RF, transmitters, VizWire, and all that kind of stuff. Another item, you're talking about companies that have a functional management structure. I have explored companies that have dysfunctional management structures, and while those rules of yours make perfect sense to anybody who's been reporting, the events of last fall have proved the really companies don't have more than half a brain. So, your experience has been with people who have an eye on the future, and they have more experience.
I hear what you're saying. On a quick break, Ed, are you running your handy talkie as you do your constitutional walk at night right now? Are you running it in the low power mode or the high power mode? There was a 20% dropout during that transmission. Go ahead. Okay, you're not sure if it's in the high power or low power mode. You're going to walk under the next street light and take a look. And so, yeah, one of the main things you said is that the management you've seen of modern-day companies so frequently is so darn dysfunctional that they will make the mistake of laying off their valuable asset, an analog, wireless, skilled man, and then suffer the consequences of the fact that you can't get them back when the good times come back. That's part of what you're saying. Now, I, for one, I'm rather light on digital knowledge, and I've managed to survive. And it's not the recommended approach. Thank goodness the so-called dime a dozen philosophy, in other words, in any reasonable organization I work with, when it comes to interfacing with a digital engineer and finding an interpreter that goes between my requirement and his requirement, I've been successful with that. I picked up enough of the jargon, but I'm rather light on digital knowledge, and yet I've survived because the skill I've got is apparently rare enough, at least that's the way I'm being treated. I think, Mel, you fall into a similar characteristic. Do you feel that you're a digital maven? I know you're an RF maven, but are you simultaneously a digital maven, or do you feel a little bit light on knowledge in that particular area because maybe you haven't emphasized it as much as you wish you had? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, I guess the cliche is of teaching an old dog a new trick is actually applicable to me too. I have not shunned away from it, of course, because I have to really get acclimated with a lot of digital jargon, procedures, and equipment, because for the company that I was with, we have to keep up basically with the newest in the field. And this began to creep in fairly quick when I first went into the field 20 some odd years before I retired. Of course, everything was basically simple analog, more or less straightforward analog. In fact, in a way, I introduced them to a number of the digital vapors that, bringing in, well, do we really need this? Seeing we're a company that supposedly is doing the cutting edge in that field, that we better, you know, get into this digital field as quick as possible, because otherwise we're going to stop losing business. They're going to come around other people with their representatives and tell them what they're offering, and come when the contract has to be renewed, we may be losing the number of our accounts. But the bottom line of the question was, Dick, is there going to be a job, a J-O-B, for these people after they put these years in of studying over?
Whether or not you find a job is a function of the skills you display and the way you advertise it, where you live, and what the industry is like. If I lived in Bentonville, Arkansas right now, the headquarters for Walmart, and if I wanted to do RF engineering of antennas, although they have a need, that's not where it takes place. They buy it as a black box from a subcontractor. So I wouldn't survive with my skill, no matter what my skill is, in that particular environment. And yet that's a very rich environment from one point of view. That's the richest company on planet Earth right now. Something like $480 billion per year flows through Walmart. I think I've heard it said that for every $10 that's spent in the United States, $1 ever flows through Walmart. So they are a force to be reckoned with. There's a lot of variables involved. I could be a digital engineer living in East Vassarboro, Maine, and I might not find an occupation, even though that's the most highly demanded occupation that you and I know of in the United States today, a skilled digital engineer or a guy who can write really well-documented software by CMM Level 5. If you've got the skill to do that, capability maturity model, and if you're a software writer and you don't know what those words mean, a high percentage of them don't. That's a sad situation, because there's a lot of software writers out there that technically are hackers that write their own individual style of software, and they come up with code that might not be transportable, might not be well documented, might not be bug free, and so on. There's all kinds of techniques for making universally applicable software that's transportable from one platform to another without creating bugs, and easily interfaced and predictable as to the rate at which the software can be generated, debugged, and the quality at which you're going to get the end. There are ways of setting a metric to do that, and only an extremely small percentage of the software writers
repeater timeout
only a stream an extremely small percentage of the current software writers know that those techniques exist, know that even the vocabulary of it, and even believe that there is any merit in doing that. The world is filled up with hackers that can make spaghetti code, which can get you in an awful lot of trouble in some circumstances. There's been a huge renovation when it comes to software writing. Software writers used to write very skillful techniques to reuse certain lines of code because memory was very valuable. All of a sudden, we've got to the state where memory is cheap as all hell. And so you don't have to be efficient. You now want to be. Use other properties that give you stability, transportability, bug-free, and whatever. Universality, predictability of performance and rate at which you can write and debug the code. If you've got the right kind of a software setup in your particular company, when you're developing very elaborate software, you can break it up into packages that go to individual people. Parallel projects can take place, and when you put it all together, it'll properly mesh. Believe it or not, that's possible if you've got the right kind of architecture and the way you do it. Very few companies have the smarts to do it that way. Their philosophy is, we've always done it this way, why should we change now? And heaven help you if that particular guy who does the majority of your software writing gets sick and goes away. You may be in a heap of trouble, and I've seen that happen. I've seen beautiful products that were doing very well until a key individual left, and all of a sudden they lost the recipe to produce that product. I've seen a few of those cases. Ed, let's see if you've gotten your handy talkie under the street light and found out if you're in the high or low power mode. So the A2EAV, K2RIW. K2RIW. Bernie recognized. Go ahead, Ed, if you're there.
It's IDJD, I think.
I am here always.
Okay, was it high or low? And VJ, be recognized. We're going to get to you also. Go ahead, Ed.
I regret to inform you that I am here, and I am using my homebrew halfway vertical dipole. Best I can offer. As far as answering a question of yours before, I'd say through my career, I've been like two-thirds digital, one-third analog slash RF. Problem is, recent years, digital design has actually morphed into software design. Right now, software and electrical engineering are like 80% overlap, and I have not made that transition well, so I've kind of settled in the niche where none of the newbies are. Back to the pick up the others, WB2, David.
Yeah, but you still found a niche that works for you. Okay, Bernie? Before we pick up with Kent, Bernie first. Bernie, what's the opinion in Garden City? Tell us. You got it, Bernie.
Well, my comment was going to be that remember that the discussion of digital versus RF are not mutually exclusive. And to a young person coming out or going to school today, I would point out to them that, for example, my wife carries a 4-band transceiver, digital transceiver, in her purse every day. It's called a cell phone. It's got Bluetooth, it has Wi-Fi, it has both U.S. and European-style transmitters.
Bernie, you might be using a handy-talkie, and maybe you walked into a place where you went into a huge black hole. We heard you say that your wife is carries with her a 4-band transceiver. That's her particular cell phone with the Bluetooth and all the other things in it. So I see what's coming, and that is a good marriage of both digital and RF is required for modern-day equipment. I'm convinced that wireless will be around with us forever. The emphasis may shift a little bit. Software-defined wireless is going to become more and more prevalent. But there still is going to be wireless because mankind has fallen in love with no restriction of wires on the things that they're using. They just love complete portability. They want to be able to walk anywhere with that little thing in their hand and communicate with the world. They have a strong desire to do that. Let's see what Kent's got to say about all this. Kent's also a guy who has spent a good percentage of his life in the Dallas, Texas area as a RF maven with some digital capability. I don't know if he does a lot of digital design, but I know he's done a lot of RF design and antenna design. Publishes a whole lot of articles in various international journals on antenna design. And earlier, Kent, maybe you didn't hear, I was quoting you for one of your quotes about the way people write technical articles, but Murphy's Law dictates you weren't listening at that time. And if you were, your ears would be itching a little bit. WA5BJV from the Dallas area, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Okay, there we go. I did catch the repeater twice earlier, and then when I released off, you were talking. KQRIW in the multitude, WA5BJV. Well, if I back up on my notes here, when you're watching a movie like the Grand Prix or the Super Bowl and they scan the camera real quick, it doesn't pixelate, it doesn't box, it just kind of loses focus. And they do have, when they upgrade their systems, dynamic allocation compression, where they will look at the digital picture of each one of the programs and actually recompress each frame on the fly to give the disk to the program which needs it the most. Doing that, they can run as many as 9 TV programs on a high-definition TV channel. And as you well know, it's 6 megs wide, but it's a 19 megabit bit stream. In one of the last shuttle flights, they did install a urine recycling system, so they don't have to haul all the water up anymore. And we've had that discussion at length on the flight to Mars. I still say you have overstated the consumables by about 10 dB. They've also developed systems now for NASA has developed a system which is capable of taking the Martian atmosphere and converting it directly into rocket fuel. So they can literally set up a little chemical reactor, probably nuclear powered, because solar power to take a long time, and sucking in only the Martian atmosphere make both a fuel and an oxidizer. And the fuel would be methane, the oxidizer would be nitrous oxide. And they can convert that directly from the Martian atmosphere to make their own fuel. They can also take the CO2, break it down directly into carbon and oxygen. That system was developed for spacecraft quite a few years ago. They haven't found it necessary. Regarding televisions, many of your high-definition TV antennas on the high end have the ability to directly go on the Internet themselves if you connect them up and download the latest software for their IQ modulators so they can update it.
Yeah, you timed out on that one. Ken, right at the time you were talking about on the air, a modern-day antenna can download the software. Is the last words we heard, and maybe you want to repeat whatever you said beyond that. Also, my question to you is that you think I'm 10 dB too pessimistic when it comes to the magnitude of the consumables required by a human being during a Mars mission. And you talked about the way some of these consumables can be generated right on the Mars surface, or at least the rocket fuel can. Therefore, make me a very rough guess, Kent, from your point of view, how many decades from now do you believe NASA might be capable of carrying on a manned mission to Mars? 35EJB, KQLIW. Look out for the 3-minute timer.
Okay. Well, I did cover a lot of stuff there, and I'll talk even faster this time. Yes, several of the modern television sets are capable of going onto the Internet and downloading the latest software for their IQ modulators. So they can update them as parameters on the TV stations change and so forth. We could have a man on Mars in 10 years if we had the will to do it. I don't think we have the will. We're going to be spending too much time investing in private industries, I'm afraid, in order to do that. But we could be there in 10 years. We just don't have the, shall we say, will. I'll have to quote Carl Sagan on this. The Homo sapiens species has long-term problems, and we have short-term problems, and we're concentrating on the short-term problems rather than the long-term problems. Really long-term would be our sun's burning out, and we need to figure out how to get to another interstellar system at some point. And, no, I missed the point. What did you say about my antenna development? And while I'm not officially a digital designer, I did teach it at the college level for a couple of years, which is, makes me totally qualified since I don't do that much digital design.
Wow. Okay, there's more to this guy, Kent Britton, than I know about, for the A5EJB. So he's taught digital design. Wow. Okay. As well as all this analog writing. I was quoting you with reference to what happens when a guy writes an article that's got a whole lot of equations and big equations in the second paragraph, that he basically doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't really understand the subject, or he wouldn't have done it that way. Those great big equations should be put in the index or in the extra information at the back of the article, not up front, because that's not where he conveys the useful engineering information to the people who want to duplicate his particular effort or design that particular product. So I was quoting you along those lines. So to answer your original question and the question that you got from the writer, Mel, as I see it, is that no matter what skill you've got, no matter how much demand that skill there happens to be in the United States, if you live in the wrong place and if you don't advertise it correctly, you won't be able to work at that occupation. So being happy in your occupation requires about 4 or 5 things. One, a passion for that subject, an interest in that subject, knowledge in that subject, living in the right area where that skill is required, having the ability to advertise that particular skill. One of the main things that ham radio teaches us is better and better ways of communicating. Human beings are human beings. Rarely do any of us work in an occupation where we're thoroughly alone, producing whatever we produce, and the public buys it from us and gives us a fortune. That's a rare situation. In almost any reasonable working environment, You're going to be writing to other people and talking to other people and living with other people. That's a skill set that's also required. So to be successful, you need all of that. Knowledge, passion, skill, location. You need a lot to be happy. Most of us ain't going to be happy, Mel. Except for you and me and Kent and Ed. The rest of us are not going to be that happy. K2KEY, K2LIW.
As a guy who works in the virtual office and has clients all over the world, yes, you can. WA5PJD.
Okay, another good point. Once you establish yourself, once the world finds out you've got the skill, and Kent just happens to have a website, you go to WA5VictorJuliaBravo.com, and you'll see some of his wares. He probably has another website that advertises his consulting business. So, once you establish yourself and have a website, yes, you can live in the outback of the world and still do well. So the website can give you a virtual location. That's another good point. So if a person loves RF, looks like there's a lot of ways of getting there, Mel. I think we sort of answered the guy's question. At least we've given him a positive spin. Guarantee he can find a zillion people out there who'll tell him that RF is dead, analog is dead, and digital is going to be king. There's a zillion people out there with that opinion. It's sort of like, I forget who it was that said, the rumors about my death are premature. I forget who said that, but you know what I mean. The death of analog and the death of RF is very, those predictions are very premature. I don't think it's going to die at all. It's always going to be there because we want portability. We want wirelessness. It'll just change in character continuously. Mel, you got it. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Don't walk twice.
What was that, Ed? Say it again.
The quote you gave was from Mark Twain.
Okay, Mark Twain. Rumors of my death are premature. Or something along those lines. You've got it, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. The only thing is the bottom line of all this is, the way you talk about jobs, we talked about the industry. The point is that I see, looking around here, and I'm looking at everything I have here, and electronics, microwave, we've got a microwave oven here, made in Japan. Radio made in Japan. Got a cell phone, made in China. Got a digital converter for the TV, and the TV set, both made overseas. The bottom line is, will there be a industry here in this country that will produce, and it's fine, like you said, Dick, if you're living in maybe in the Okie Swamp down there in Florida, go walking around looking for a job in some of the technologies, because they won't even know what the heck you're talking about there. They know about alligators, fishing, and whatever. Wrong place. But will there be a place anywhere in the United States for any of this so-called futuristic equipment? Will they make anything? We're not making any. Is there a plasma TV or any of this new technology and computers? Is any of this being made in this country? Maybe there is some design work, but is there any manufacturing facilities being set up for it? I doubt very much. Over.
KC2QIQ.
Glenn recognized, I'm going to plug in an opinion first, and that is, there's a huge difference between research, development, design, and manufacturing. Because of the price of labor in Southeast Asia, I think the majority of companies are going to have mass production take place in Mexico and Southeast Asia, among other places. So mass production in the United States is not going to be anywhere near as much of it as there was in the previous century or half century. That's an opinion. But when it comes to the research, development, and design to solve man's problems, solve mankind's problems, there's still a great need for that. It's a rare company that will take a concept, a nugget of an idea, and outsource the research and development of the concept. That's a rare company in the United States. The majority of companies they've got any pride in the concept that they've just invented, the invention that they've got in their head, this nugget of an idea. They want to carry it out and do the R&D and first pre-production testing locally. That's what I believe. Let's see what Glenn's got to say on that one. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to expand upon that, Dick. I have to agree with you that most of the American companies with American funding here in the States, that certainly is the attitude. But I guess one of the realities that is happening, though, is that the majority of not only manufacturing is taking place in Asia these days because of the lower cost of producing the products, but they're also developing the capabilities of their own, pre-production and design and development. I mean, are they there yet? I wouldn't say 100%, but it's something that I would say that as time goes by, especially within the next 10 years, they'll be designing much of their own things and products over there, and that's where a large majority of the funding is going. But I still think that there's a very large need for technical and engineering and design capabilities here in the States because, granted, we may not be doing the product engineering, but I think as far as systems engineering and many things, even in local governments, they need radio systems, communication systems, computer systems. In other words, eventually, we're still the consumer of these devices. So you're going to need technical people and people who are going to understand these systems. So I still think it's very viable, but maybe along with your engineering degree, it would be also good to have an MBA or something else to back it up with that business background as well. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
I see what you're saying, Glenn. And, okay. Let me ask you this then, Glenn. I'm going to reword Mel's question as it was almost presented to him, and that is, if your son said, gee, Dad, I just love this ham radio hobby. I really like tinkering with antennas. I like analog. I like RF. I'd like to emphasize that as my occupation. My guess is you would tell your son, okay, that's your passion, do it, but do also try to educate yourself in these other areas. Don't be too narrow-band. Make sure you've got some digital background, software background, because you're going to be interfacing with those people. Make sure you've got some communication skills, if possible. Try to get some management skills, so you know how to run a company once the product is properly developed. I'm guessing you would give him some advice along those lines. But I'm putting words in your mouth. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
You're just, I think, adding on to really what I'm saying here, is that definitely a technical background is something I think that a lot more people should have. There's a lot of ignorance to technology out in the industry, and if you are even a business person who really doesn't need to have a design background, just that ability to understand the technologies, how much of a better manager you could be having that extra knowledge to make decisions. So certainly, yes, definitely always follow your passions, educate yourself in that way, but I think if you're really interested in the technologies, it really pays to understand the business end of it as well, and probably move even, to take that degree a little bit further and move on to see if you can match it up with an MBA or some certainly some business experience as well. And there again, you can always get your foot in the door in a company, maybe not necessarily from the technical end, from more of a business end, a sales end, some other ends that are also very, very good, strong positions to be in today's industries and going into the future.
Okay, I'm going to try to add a couple words to what Glenn just said. A modern-day human being living in a place like the United States is going to have to admit to himself that technology is here to stay. That genie is out of the bottle and climbing out faster and faster. Technology is here to stay. Technology is going to have a major impact on our lives from now on. Therefore, learn something about various kinds of technology. Develop curiosity. The majority of the progress that mankind has ever made is because of curiosity. Emphasize curiosity in yourself and your offspring. Curiosity is damn valuable. Occasionally it'll get you in trouble. so-called little experiment, that little statement people make, curiosity killed the cat, yeah, but satisfaction brought him back. Curiosity is an extremely valuable thing. The major common denominator of ham radio operators is they've fallen in love with technology, and they're doing it as a hobby. Very rarely does a person get into ham radio because he thinks it's a soapbox and he's going to be able to